Okay, good afternoon.
Good afternoon.
Yeah, so can we meet you?
Yes, I am Oluwatimiye Emeka Okoka. I'm an actor. I have, to my credit, some plays. Ogun Skuga, Once Upon an Elephant, that was staged at the National Theatre, and so forth.
Okay, yeah. Similarly, let's start like this. How would you describe tragedy?
Well, I'd say tragedy is the totality of all the unpleasant things that happen, that exist.
Wow, that's interesting. Can you be a bit, maybe some of those totality of things that we do, maybe you can be a bit...
Well, this is, for example, if someone needs to sit, I consider someone needs to sit and doesn't have a chair. Things that are simple as that, I consider them tragedies because they upset the wish of that person that needs to sit. And so it's also a tragedy when probably a bomb goes off somewhere and 100 and something people die. They're both tragedies on different scales, with different magnitude and effect, but they're all tragedies. So every unpleasant thing that happens is in effect a tragedy.
So you think tragedy in this sense can be both personal and collective?
Yes, indeed.
So in that sense, how would you now say something, okay, this is a tragic situation. Is there any way we can delineate some kind of difference between when we say this is a tragic situation and this is tragedy? Now, because of the way you define tragedy is so interesting. So how would you link it to?
I like to take a very relativist view to it. I believe that when you deconstruct tragedy as a concept, you discover that tragedy does not have a universal meaning. And I did place an emphasis on effect. When you're talking about effect, tragedy does not affect everybody the same way. But as long as it causes some sort of upset, causes some sort of unpleasantness, then you can always characterize that situation as tragic.
Okay, now let's come back to the plays that you've done. The two plays or so that you mentioned now are tragedies. Let's take Once Upon an Elephant.
Yes, sir.
What was your role in that play?
Well, I played Leary.
Who is this Leary?
Leary is a friend, a bosom friend to Dele. One of the, I'll call it dissenters in the midst of the youth. They are very, very jocular and laissez-faire about stuff. They are not the most kind guys. And almost every time they are the ones playing agent provocateurs for all their actions, they are not agreeable.
And you think we have people like that in the society?
Yes, I feel like we all have a bit of Leary in us. Different skill. And that is also why I said it's relativist. In certain situations, Dele and Leary raised certain important things to light, but for most of the time they were just clogs to the wheels of progress. So it is very, very important to understand that these things go.
Okay, so how did you prepare for that role? What was it like, you know, getting to now in that context? We will say in the relationship that we have amongst the youth, we will classify your role as one of those antagonists,
yes,
so to speak.
Yes.
So how did you prepare for, you know, that kind of a role? Well, considering ordinarily that's not your nature, or is that your nature in real life?
Well, I did say we all have a bit of Leary in us. So because if you call it an antagonist, I believe that we can all be antagonists and protagonists to certain causes. So I believe, number one, I channeled into my inner antagonist. So that's very important to understand that. Well, you are not supposed to be an agreeable person per this role. And then I think, to a very, 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 very considerable extent, the playwright, Bosedi Ademilu Afolayan, really wrote the character as well. They were very, very... You could see that there was complexity to the characters, but she introduced them to you in a very, very simple way. So it was very, very easy to tap into what you're supposed to be. And then moving forward, I do recollect going home, watching movies, because it was set in a Yoruba scene. Watching movies, especially those ones that are very, very old, that old Yoruba videos. Yes, yeah. Epics. To understand how the traditional Yoruba antagonist is supposed to be. His inflections, his, you know, and the way he reacts to certain people's reactions to his antagonism. So those were the kind of things that I did in preparation for the role.
Now, let's look at that play in totality.
Yeah.
How much of the real world does that play reflect?
Well, I feel like actors, performers, on stage, we are all living in an ecosystem. We are all existing. We are part of the real world. So every single thing that is done on stage is deliberate, yes, but they are all representational of what we can obtain in the real world. Certain actions are magnified because drama aims to draw attention to certain issues. Drama cannot aim to discuss every single issue. It can only magnify certain topics, certain characters in society, but they have to be based on the society. So yes, Once Upon an Elephant was pretty much representational of.
Now let's go a bit into the process of putting the play together. The rehearsal,
yes,
you know, the rehearsal process. Let's talk about the casting. The rehearsal process. Maybe some of it. Maybe you can remember some of it.
Yeah, I remember. I remember we had a reading. Remember we had a reading, and everybody had a fair chance to be casted into certain roles. And I feel like, by and large, the casting was superb, because a lot of us were put in roles that hitherto we didn't even know we could do, but upon encountering the script with the help of the director and the crew, we and other cast members, we were able to deliver. So to a very, very large extent, I think the rehearsal process was one that was very, very engaging. It helped the actors to learn more.
So what one or two moments or directorial choices did you really find interesting in relation to how it helps you to be able to play your role?
Yeah, something that I really find interesting was, I remember there was a time, this one actually happened in performance, but it is something that happened because we had good rehearsals. I remember one of the actors came on stage late, and then all of us, the youths, were on stage already. And one of us, I think it was me, just gave a line, an ad lib, that wasn't recorded, but it just happened that because we'd been told to read, reread, research, be attuned, we'd done lots of concentration exercises. I'm pretty sure that no audience member could have, even the ones that watched the first show, could not have, none of them could have predicted that that wasn't part of our blocking. Because
so it was a spontaneous
reaction. Yeah, it was spontaneous, it was instinctive. And it was born out of the fact that all of us had, in the rehearsals, were attuned to rehearsing. We were engaging ourselves. We knew each other's lines. We could cover for each other even during rehearsals. And then it just brought out that instinct during performance.
Okay. Apart from that, you didn't dance.
I didn't.
But what was it like? You know, you were.
Yes.
At the rehearsal, you saw some of those dances and music. How would you describe them in relation to their effect in the play generally?
Yeah, I think the dance, for example, dance was well coordinated. I won't make pretensions to being an authority on dance, but I do know that the dances were very, very interpretative when an action was going to happen. I mean, there were even times when, if you had been attentive enough, actions had been played out during dance that didn't need to be repeated during when movements in acting were taking place. So, and then the music was well coordinated. We had an assorted range of, I remember I was part of the orchestra, we had an assorted range of drums, we had an ascertained range of vocal types, so music was really good.
So let's come back to it. So do you think the kind of drama that we have on stage that is dramatized will have some kind of a deeper effect on the audience than the one that we encounter on everyday life?
Yeah, I did mention magnification. The thing is, in everyday life, just like I said, there are so many tragedies. So in everyday life, we encounter millions of tragedies in a day.
To the extent that we don't...
We become desensitized. So we become desensitized to all these tragedies. But what happens on stage is, you know, theater says, look, this is an issue. The director, the playwright says, this is an issue. And this is where I'm going to focus my lens. This is where I'm going to channel my creative energy. And so you are able to see that thing in isolation, in isolation from all the other tragedies that you hear about, that you encounter, that you go through. So that is where theater comes in as a magnifying glass. So there is, when you encounter tragedy on stage, there is every tendency that it is magnified and you are attuned to it more than you are in real life.
So you think about theater, the power of the theater to isolate a particular tragedy and dramatize it. You think it gives it a greater force?
Yes. Because at the end of the day, as I said before, we encounter so many tragedies that it just becomes a case of desensitizing yourself from it. So many things, you won't even see them as tragedies again. It's just like in Nigeria, you don't see power outages as tragedies again.
Whereas they are
actually
it's
tragedies.
It's a national tragedy.
Yes. So what if you bring, what's it called, on stage, the issue of Nigeria, for example, and there's a power outage on stage, and you make the power outage central to the plot, then you've obviously made these people realize that, look, come home. You're supposed to be sensitized to the fact that you don't have power. You get? So that's what you've done. So in any case, theater drama helps us on stage to magnify, to make big, to exaggerate these problems and to isolate them and bring them to our focus.
Yeah, that play we talked about, Once Upon an Elephant, the story of a young man who kind of manipulated the way for the young man to come on stage, and then this man becomes a tyrant, and then the whole society is in trouble, to the extent that eventually when he's defeated, we realize that the man who manipulated the way for him is actually his real father.
Yes.
Now, how are we supposed to deal with that kind of tragic situation?
Well, the play is Yoruba, and it is traditional Yoruba.
But that doesn't mean that tragedy is only peculiar to the Yoruba.
Yeah, of course. So I think it shows that, and it is pre-colonial, so I think it shows that in Yoruba, Nigerian, African world society, even before external influences, there's been cases where people try to rule by proxy. You can even see it in our modern world when, during the Cold War, where the United States and the USSR fought through proxies, they would use nations, smaller nations, to do their dirty work. And then it is reflective in today's politics too, where we have godfatherism and stuff, where people want to rule through proxies even whilst they are not there, career politicians that are not actually there for the good of the people, and are only working for their own gains. So yes, society can only deal with it by coming back to certain concepts like the Ubuntu concept that we all are, because we all exist because one of us exists. One person, a group of people make up a community. So at the end of the day, if we all see ourselves as our brother's keepers, if we all see ourselves as transient beings that are just here to play our part on stage, on the stage that is life, and we just live. And we try as much as possible that the next person who is coming after us has it better than we do. You get? Then things will be better.
So you think that this concept, this whole concept of Ubuntu, this idea of collective responsibility, you see the breakdown of all of these can itself be considered tragedy.
Yes. Yes. Well, I think one of the tragedies about that concept is a selfish person probably made it. Because we are all humans and we are bound to be selfish. But a selfish person, selfish people made that this thing to protect their own communality. Now it has happened that even in the creation of that thing, because selfish people have made it for selfish people.
That's the Ubuntu.
Yes, the old concept. So because selfish people have made it for selfish people, the thing is dead on arrival, no matter how noble it seems. Because humans are by nature individualist. And then of course when we see that community pays the individual, they tend to run on that community. But then there's a tragedy, because the whole concept itself, the fact that the concept is unrealistic, an egalitarian society is, from all indications, unrealistic. It is false.
It seems you are trying to hint at the failure of democracy.
Yes.
As some form of tragedy.
Yes, I feel like every single human system is a tragedy. I remember one of my favorite bands, Megadeth, made a song in the 70s, and they said. Peace sells, but who's buying? And then that if there's a new system, they are all ready to go in script. Now, since that time, I remember it was Reagan that was in the 80s. Reagan was the president or something
of America.
Yes, and then we've had so many changes in America.
Mm.
We've had so many people from the far left, from the far right. The guy there now is from the far right, and Megadeth, the members are still alive, and the system still isn't working. You get? So the thing is, there's and that's the tragedy of the human situation. There will be no system that actually works. Because for it to work, you have to take into account the billions of individual minds that have to be pulled together to make that thing work. And their own egos.
So in a way, you are kind of painting a very dark picture. Like everywhere you turn, there is some kind of tragedy.
Yes.
And there seems not to be any escape.
You know, there is escape.
So what is that escape?
But the escape is ephemeral. When you pay money to watch a theater show, you pay money to watch the show. You pay money to be introduced into a new realm of tragedy. A tragedy that might make you laugh. I feel like every single thing on stage is a tragedy.
Okay, so it's not even, it is not every time that you even see a tragedy that people mourn. Sometimes you can laugh and
because when you are going to watch a tragic play, it might be excusing you from the tragedies of your own personal life. Because you are probably watching the tragedy of another society on stage, just like an American who is watching the story of Biafra. That's the tragedy of Nigeria and the Igbos. It is not the tragedy of the Swedish person. So it lets them, it probably allows the Swedish person to escape the tragedy that, okay, Scandinavians are one of the, they have one of the highest suicide rates in the world. Because suicide is not our reality, it's not really our reality yet.
In this part.
But Biafra is our reality. The civil war is our reality. Genocide is our reality. So you understand? So even theater is a means of escaping that thing. And that's why the world is increasingly becoming theatrical. Everything is done, is staged.
Okay, so are you saying now that tragedy, we could consider it a culturally or socially specific
yes,
concept? Kind of.
I remember I got taught about the individual, the community, and then the universe. So the thing is, every single thing comes down to these people. When there's an individual, when there's a group, and the whole world. So at the end of the day, tragedy has to be characterized to these groups. You have an example, if you're in Yoruba land, you lose a king. It's a collective tragedy. But in some form, it is a good thing, because then it allows for fresh people to come inside. People like someone, another ruling house will be able to come in. And then it also plays into the Yoruba maxims of newness and freshness. So in any case,
and even in that circumstance, somebody died. That death is actually specific tragedy for a particular family.
Yes, for a particular family. Yes, the old community might mourn it, but it is not that much of a loss as it is to the family of the person. So tragedy comes in different magnitudes. Some are personal, some are community wide, and some are just worldwide.
So let's say what is happening in the Middle East, for instance.
Yes, Middle East is worldwide. I feel like over the
years. Why do you think middle east is worldwide? You see, it's not happening in Lagos where we are.
Wait, but if you look at the fact that the Middle East, the problems in the Middle East have affected almost every single nation. Because I feel like there are few nations that have not lost something to the violence in the Middle East. We come to Nigeria, we see that they have sleeper cells in Nigeria, they have Boko Haram, they have ISWAP. All these organizations in many ways see these organizations that do similar things, that conduct terrorist attacks in the Middle East as forerunners, as forebears. Some of them even have direct links to them. You have, I remember there was this dossier released in 2017 or so by the CIA where Nigeria was being warned about the Shiites. I think this was during Jonathan's time, I do not remember, because they have direct links to Hezbollah that is being sponsored by Iran to conduct terrorist attacks. So things like that, we find that, and because of the way the world has gradually become smaller due to technology, you see that
globalization.
Yes, you see that just as much as you can import good things, good ideas in twinkle of an eye, you can also export bad ones. So what is happening in the Middle East is really tragic. It's a worldwide tragic.
So in a way, let's consider this one before we wrap up the interview.
Yes, sir.
That particular play that you talked about, Once Upon a Elephant, yes. I know one of the strongest tools in this was music as a material of, projecting the tragedy that the play dramatizes. How would you like to talk about that?
Well, I didn't mention it before. Music, the play was a Yoruba play. To the Yorubas are very, very... Yorubas are people of records. If the Yorubas have 500 mediums to record something, they would use it to record a single event, no matter how insignificant you might think it is. Now, during the play, we imbibed that every single member of the play, whether it was you were supposed to be in the orchestra or you were supposed to be dancing, was implored to sing, because that was the only way the music could project the community. If everybody was singing, if everybody could relate to the story being sung, the lyrics being projected, if everybody could relate to it, then it outlined that this was a community of people who were experiencing the same thing, same tragedies, were going through the same triumphs. So the music was very, very integral of that.
Yeah, you must have seen the last convocation play, the Girls and Anatomy.
Yes, I did.
And then, that's a tragedy.
Yes.
And then, I want to ask, do you think that the aim of the adapter is simply to portray the fact that the society in which we live in is inescapably tragic?
Yes. I think when you look at the director was deliberate. There was, you could find a myriad of cultures there. So that was to tell us that, look, whether you're black, you're white, you're Ibibio, you're Igbo, you're Yoruba, there's one thing we all share, and that's unpleasantness. There's one thing we all share, that's bad surprises. There's one thing we all share, that's tragic flaws. And so the director was trying to say, look, let's all come together to experience this. Let's all understand that tragedy is a human constant. So that was the director's aim.
So now, to what extent do you think those directorial choices actually worked to give some kind of resonance to the tragedy?
Yes. I feel like since the director employed those things, I feel everybody that watches it, that saw the play, would have seen that, well, there is a certain universality about tragedy. And that's what the adapter is trying to say. So I feel like, because it was even amplified so much that from the costumes, you could tell that this person was from this place. From their tongues, from the inflections, from the languages they spoke, you could tell that this person was from this place. So yes, it was very, very effective. I feel like it was very, very effective in putting it in the minds of the audience that there is a universality about tragedy, and this one's tragedy, the tragedy of the protagonist, is not just a personal tragedy. It is first of all a personal tragedy, but if you look at it in the actual sense, it is not just a personal tragedy, it is a communal and worldwide one.
Okay, Sumileyin Koka, thank you so very much for this brilliant interview.
Thank you, sir.